For those of you who haven't been here with our other lessons, this is our seventh lesson, I believe, six or seven. But we're studying things that we should be teaching our children, and we're starting a three-part series tonight. Last two lessons we've had, we studied on really impressing upon our children to make their religion or their faith their own. In other words, they've been taught things here over the years. We've taught them at home over the years. But their faith must be stuff that they believe and not simply stuff because they've been taught by their moms and their dads and relatives and so forth. And so with that, again, we're going to start the three-part series tonight on sins to avoid. Of course, the list is endless on sins to avoid. But again, we're going to start here with some sins that are especially prevalent among young Christians. Again, those things we can teach them. These are often seen with the preteen, early teen years. But even in children, infants, well, not infants, but the younger ones. And you'll see what I'm talking about here in just a few moments. But again, some of these sins are prevalent among ourselves. It's things we need to avoid. And all of these things, we've got to make sure that we're pure so that we can teach those things and be a good example. Because if we're teaching these things and we're not living these things, our kids will see that in all things we do. The next lesson for next week will be covering more of a older teenage Christian that they should avoid. And then the last one is going to focus more on sins that are more prominent in older Christians, but things we need to get our children ready for. Again, hopefully these lessons will be profitable for all of us, because they apply to all of us, the things that we are subjected to and can fall into. The first one, I'll tell a little story here. I don't know how long ago this was written, but it says, when Johnny was 6 years old, and this is about cheating, by the way, sins to avoid cheating. When Johnny was 6 years old, he was with his father when they were caught speeding, and his father handed the officer a $5 bill with his driver's license. "It's okay, son," his father told him. "Everybody does it." And he drove off. When he was 8, he was permitted to a family council. He went there with his Uncle George, who was presiding over it. So Uncle George was trying to get a tax write-off for his taxes. And he said, "It's okay, kid. Everybody does it." When he was 9, his mother took him to his first theater production. The box office was packed. There was no seats available until the mother conveniently reached in and pulled out $2 and handed it to the doorman, and they were seated. And she said, "It's okay, son. Everybody does it." When Johnny was 12, he broke his glasses on the way to school. His Aunt Francine persuaded the insurance company that they had been stolen rather than broken. And so they collected the money for that. "It's okay, kid," she said. "Everybody does it." When he was 15, he made center on the high school basketball team. His coach showed him how he could block out when he was guarding. At the same time, he could grab the opposing player's shirt so that the official couldn't see it. "It's okay, kid," the coach said. "Everybody does it." When he was 16, he took his first summer job at the market. His assignment was to put overripe tomatoes in the bottom of the boxes, and he put the good ones on top so they would show off. And the manager told him, "It's okay, kid. Everybody does it." He was 18. Johnny and his neighbor both applied for the same college scholarship. Johnny now, he was a marginal student, wasn't very good. His neighbor was in the upper 3% of his class, but his neighbor couldn't play center basketball, and so Johnny got it. "It's okay," the college person said. "Everybody does it." When he was 19, he was approached by an upperclassman who offered the test answers for $3. And his upperclassman friend said, "It's okay, kid. Everybody does it." Johnny was caught cheating, and he was sent home in disgrace. And his parents said, "How could you do this to your mother and me?" his father said. "You never learned anything like this at home." His aunt and his uncle also were shocked. And they said, if there's anything the adult world can't stand, it's a kid who cheats. So you see, in this lesson, he was taught this over time. It wasn't something that he came up on his own. It was done over and over. Cheat is defined by Webster to suggest tricks which escape or to intend to escape observation. So in our illustration there, the basketball one, for instance, he was grabbing the shirt of the other player and he was intending to escape observation of the officials. If he's cheating on a test, obviously he's trying to escape the observation of the teacher. There's a questionnaire that I've seen before, and I'm sure there's several of them. You may have heard of them, where students, whether in high school or they're in college, and they're asked to report, have they ever cheated on a test? And they're sometimes told, you don't have to sign this, but have you ever cheated on a test, or have you ever observed or known anyone? And the one questionnaire that I saw online says about 90% had answered yes. And that doesn't really surprise me. Again, we're talking about either cheating or know of someone who cheats. But the point is made that cheating is very prevalent, especially at young ages. But it's also prevalent in almost all walks of life. During Noah's time, besides Noah's household, what was everybody else doing? We always hear, if your friends are jumping off a bridge, or if everyone else was, you know, would you do it? You know, we always hear everybody's doing it, when it comes to drugs, alcohol, cheating, whatever it may be. But again, what was everybody doing during Noah's time? What was everybody doing in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, save a few? Again, the majority tends to be doing the incorrect things. And again, if we learn to cheat when we're younger, as in the story I just told was impressed upon this young person over years and years and years, we'll learn as we get older that we may be able to do it too, unless it's corrected. And so we got to watch out, again, as we say, in all things we teach, things that we're teaching our children. Make sure we're not being that bad influence upon them. Make sure we're being a good influence, because you never know what they're going to pick up and take and the things they're going to dispel, even the little things. But we need to establish principles of honesty. Let's turn to Isaiah. Chapter 33. And again, establishing some principles of honesty into our kids. I have quite a few verses we'll be doing tonight, so we'll try to get through them all. Begin at verse 15. He who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, who despises the gain of oppressions, who shakes his hands lest they hold a bribe, who stops his ears from hearing of bloodshed, and shuts his eyes from looking on evil. He will dwell on the heights. His place of defense will be on the fortress of rocks. His bread will be given him. His water will be sure. So, principle of being honest. Romans chapter 12. Verse 17, repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to what is honorable in the sight of all. And again, always give thought to every decision you make, because it's even little decisions, as we know through our lives, like a little decision that was a bad decision that you made, but it affected your life in an adverse way. But even the smallest decisions sometimes can affect us. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Verse 21, for we aim at what is honorable, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of man. Now, again, our main concern, our main focus is to be right in God's eyes, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But the reason we'll be honorable in man's eyes, why? Is because they're looking at us, they're watching us, and how can we teach them if we have a bad reputation ourselves? And so that lends itself to it as well. Any comments about cheating? The next one is sins to avoid is lying. Lying is something very young children learn to do. That's where I meant you may see some young kids involved in this. Y'all know young kids who lie? Why do they tend to lie at that age? What's the number one reason you think? To get them out of trouble. And so sometimes they, oftentimes they'll learn, if this worked once, it'll work twice, and so forth. Sometimes it's laughed off. I've seen children who kind of lie, it becomes a joke to them sometimes, and they have to be set apart and told, this is not funny. You know, this has gone too far. Maybe it's laughed at too often or too much, and it was seen as a habit forming at a young, very young age, and so that's got to be stopped at a very early age. But you're right. It's to avoid punishment. Oftentimes, as adults, that's the same reason, to avoid punishment. sometimes it becomes habit, and we'll get to that in just a second. Lying is something, though, that young Christians need to put away early, as we said, because it can become a habit for various reasons. They got to put off the old man and put on the new. Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 23 and 24, and be renewed in the spirit of your minds. Again, this is a mind-changing thing. This is not a matter of saying, I need to change, and you're going to change, but you made up in your mind that you need to change in the spirit of your minds, and put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. And again, as we talked about for the past couple of lessons, again, making your faith, your religion, yours, that's what comes with that mindset, that mind change, that this is the right thing to do because it comes not from mom and dad, it comes from God. And this is the way that He wants me to live. This is the way I have to live if I want to go to heaven one day. And so it's a mind change. And realizing we have the little white lies out there and so forth, but that can be a serious thing. We've got to realize and teach to our children that, you know, again, it is a serious thing because it comes from the devil. Lying is of the devil. John chapter 8. And verse 44. Let's begin with yeah, 44 is fine. You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So again, He's the ruler of this world, and he's the father of lies. So teach our children where lies come from, originate from. We often hear about the first sin in the Bible. What was the first recorded sin of a church member? What was their sin? They were lying. Acts chapter 5. Verse 1, but a man named Ananias with his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property, and with his wife's knowledge he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back yourself part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to man, but to God. And of course, we know what their fate was. So impress upon our children what can be the seriousness of lies. Let's also note to them in Proverbs that God hates lying. Read a few passages from here. Begin at chapter 6. Verse 17, beginning. Let's begin at verse 16. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness, same, who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. So it's either named twice there in two respects. Turn over to chapter 12 of Proverbs. Verse 22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight. And then over in chapter 13, verse 5, the righteous hates falsehood, but the wicked brings shame and disgrace. So we see God's attitude toward lying. That's an abomination to him. Also note, if someone turn to Hosea chapter 4, please. You often hear people talk about drugs, for instance, that marijuana or even alcohol is a precursor to harder things. Could we consider lying the same thing? If they start out young and it's sinful to do those things. But in someone read Hosea chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, and notice that the company that lies come with as well. Someone have that?
Here's the
So the point is, what was the key word toward the end? Breaking all restraint. All these things were available to him. But lying is involved, or noted, I should say, in that list of things that are unacceptable to God to be doing. As we mentioned, lying can easily become a habit. We know habits are hard to break. Anything can become a habit. But lying is also included in that. Do you know anybody as an adult, and that could be an older adult, that it seems like they're known for lying? They're just not trustworthy. And if it's a game to them, some of them do it to cause problems. But I'm sure that I know people like that. I'm sure you do too. So that's just, they have fun telling lies. It's not that they were trying to get out of trouble, but they just enjoy telling falsehoods on other people, part of gossip and so forth. So it's something we need to get out of our children as early as we can. Colossians chapter 3. Verse 10. Actually, start verse 9. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. So again, a warning against lying to one another here. And let's turn to Revelation chapter 21 for the last part. Just like we read in Hosea, this list of people who are not going to make it to heaven. Chapter 21 of Revelation in verse 8. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. And so, strict warnings to our kids. Develop good habits and make sure lying is not one of them. Okay? Questions or comments about that?
Craig, you were talking about that sixth chapter and 16th verse of Proverbs.
Yes.
I think that someone discarding among your brother is the worst thing in that time. Because you take one person to say something to one of the members, and it causes a whole bunch of problems.
We're told to have unity, and stressed to have unity, but that goes even outside the church. As I mentioned, some people just enjoy causing problems among other people. And they get they'll start the problem and then sit back and watch and enjoy.
I call it a problem in the church is the worst thing I believe you could ever do.
Anything else? Stealing. Stealing is a prevalent sin among young people today. Some stats show that the greatest percentage of shoplifters are from teenage years or younger. And oftentimes it's been shown, and Mark may know this to some degree, sometimes when they're caught, they have enough money in their pocket to pay for whatever they were taking. And so it's a joyride for them. It's fun for them. But they didn't have to steal it. I had a friend back when I was in high school who bragged a lot. Now, you remember cassette tapes? Small cassette tapes? You remember when they put cassette tapes in those long white plastic bins, I guess, so you couldn't steal them? He would walk in to Kmart, wherever, and he would go take a cassette or two. He was a strong guy, played football. And he'd pop it open and take the cassettes. Not that he needed them. His family had a lot of money. Not that he wanted those, but he enjoyed doing that. And we always, you know, discouraged him as much as we could. You know, you shouldn't, why are you doing that? And then it came to one point to where he was over a friend's house, mutual friend, and for no reason besides nothing better to do, he stole something from that house. And the mother of my friend was very hurt by that, obviously, because he had kind of been close. He had no ill will toward them. He just enjoyed stealing. And so, lesson to, you know, sometimes there's no reason why they do it. We had the recent break-in that, like Mark had mentioned, where four places were broke into, and it's because they were bored. Some items were stolen. And so they didn't need those items. Some football helmets were stolen. They didn't play football. Why would they need those? They weren't going to sell them. Why take them? And so another thing to press on our kids is, along with this, is the company they keep. You know, they could have been some kids with them who had no place else to go. They were not old enough to drive, and that type of thing happens as well. But impress upon our kids about the folly of stealing, and also their friends who do those things. So sometimes stealing is encouraged by older people. Another story is told about how this father was explaining to his son, this is the story, how he had managed to steal an expensive chain hoist from this company where he worked at. And what he did is he wrapped it in a burlap bag and he put it in a tree. If you think about a tree that has a burlap bag at the bottom where the roots are, and so he stuck this big, heavy chain in there and put a tree in it to make it look like it was a small tree. And so when he walked out, the gate guard thought it was simply a small tree that someone had bought and given to him. And again, what would be the thought of children listening to such stories, especially when they're told sometimes, well, just always be clever enough that you don't get caught. And that's impressed by the world a lot, too. They don't condemn the stealing as long as you're smart enough to get away with it, for whatever the reason with those. It's in the Ten Commandments. We won't turn to that. Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. It's also reinstated in the New Testament. We had a lesson a while back about how we're not under the Old Testament law anymore. We're not under the New Testament. But those laws that we are, are restated in the New Testament. So let's look at that just for that reason. Ephesians chapter 4. And verse 28. Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. So even back then, you had the thief who has obeyed the gospel, and we can see that in our day and time now, and just like lying, it can become a habit, just like with my friend that I talked about, stealing can become a habit. And so we may know someone who has obeyed and has turned their life around, they repented, but they're still having issues with stuff we don't normally consider. I mean, we don't normally consider stealing to be a problem for somebody in the church, do we? But if that's their habit, then it's something that needs to be broke. Here we saw that. Bible examples of what happened to thieves. Achan from the Old Testament. That's too lengthy of a read for that. But Judas as well is turned to John chapter 12. Now here was a disciple of Christ, and yet he had a problem. Verse 6, he said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge over the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Why he was a thief? For fun, for money, I don't know. But he was a thief. And of course, we know what happened to him. His character was flawed because of it, the things that happened because of those things. Any comments about stealing?
Hey, I'd read, not to go forward, I'd read a while back, you know, when the economy was way down, the country in some forms was suffering, the houses were being lost, stuff, all the theft that was going on, because that's what that produced. I'd read the years of the Great Depression, when the country suffered even more than it ever had, that there's hardly any theft going on.
Do you have an answer? I'll give one or two. Yeah. Morals and what they've been taught. I was about to say, in addition to that's definitely one, where they knew everyone was suffering the same, but I don't know if that would actually play into it at all. For some, it might. Some people don't have problems with taking from the more well-to-do, but they think it's bad to take from those who don't have. So. Yeah. But morals were taught back then. And I'd say that goes along with the same thing. Someone has lying can build from a young age or any age once it starts or even stealing, but someone who gives the word and for whatever reason goes back on it. And they probably feel bad about it, but the next time it's a little easier. And that's the truth in any sense. It's just easier the more you do it. The first time you feel guilty, then your conscience gets seared, and and it's not a big deal to you. And so, you know, as with anything, as most habits start when we're young, we impress upon our kids to not get started early and really be on the lookout for things that can be developed early. Any other comments on that? Selfishness. Now, I mentioned last week when making your religion your own, you should be selfish, in meaning I've got to watch out for myself and make sure that I'm taken care of, that I'm doing what's right first before I can help anybody else, make sure I make it to heaven in those respects. But also teach our children to not be selfish. Don't live for themselves. Luke chapter 9. There's more to them than just themselves. And this is a big problem nowadays. Kids are me, me, me. What do I get out of this and so forth? I remember, actually, I was going to do a lesson on this one too, but I'm not getting anything worked up. But the self-esteem movement that was started, I remember starting back when I was in, well, middle school, grade school, or junior high, in health class teaching self-esteem. And they don't seem bad, but I see what it's turned now into, how bad it's gotten to. They went overboard with the self-esteem to where they're valuing themselves too much and they don't value others. But anyway, don't live for self. Luke chapter 9 and verse 23. He said to all, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, of course, in the context of this is talking about following Jesus. But the point is made, denying ourselves in all things. We're told to do well for others. And the concept is taught of treating others, you know, better than ourselves. And so we need to impress that upon our kids, that they don't live in their own little vacuum, their own little bubble. There's others out there, and they have a responsibility and duty to do for others all the time. Again, some are totally wrapped up in self. They think, well, if people love me, they try to please me. And that's a lot of mindset nowadays. If you really love me, you try to please me. Well, that's not the way it works, but some think that. Someone turned a couple of verses here. Lamentations chapter 3 for me. Teach them to be a helper. And I'll turn over to the next verse here. Lamentations 3 and verse 27, please, somebody. Again, the context might be a little off on that, but again, youth time, burdens, being a worker, okay, or being a helper, you appreciate being helped, don't you? And you appreciate helping others once you begin that process. And you learn that it feels better a lot of the times helping others than it does helping yourself. But that takes a little bit of getting to. That's not just something you have to do that and experience that feeling for that to happen. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 4. This is talking about being a sluggard. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 19. Again, the way of a sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, and the path of the upright is a level highway. In chapter 22 of Proverbs, in verse 29. Do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings, and he will not stand before obscure men. So the idea here is just being a worker, being a helper, especially in the context that I'm going to talk about, is in helping others. Not being selfish with your time and other things. Ephesians chapter 6. And this goes along with being unselfish. And that's obeying your parents. Again, that concept of me, me, me. Very selfish. We're told in Ephesians 6, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And then turn over to, for time's sake, we won't go there, but Luke chapter 2 and verse 51, we're told as an example of how Jesus was obedient to his parents, and his mother, and Mary had put it in her heart, or treasured in her heart, those things. He was obedient to them. 2 Timothy chapter 3. verse 2. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, and unholy. It's significant. I think it's significant that the first term, lovers of self, and this is listed with disobedient to parents. You think that goes along with it? If you're a lover of yourself, that's going to affect if you're disobedient to your parents. It's the attitude that you have that this is about me. And all these things are listed there, especially those two together. I think it's significant. One who is self-willed or self-centered, again, is not going to be interested in pleasing their parents. Forget about what God says about it. I just don't want to do it. And so they're self-willed, self-centered. We need to make sure that's not in our children and explain to them why. It's not enough for us as parents to say, this is what you do and this is just because. Although that's the answer sometimes. But as best we can to explain to them why. And we can show them things from the Bible, and we can also show them the results in real life situations. Give them examples in their life that where they did something that had the good results from those things or the bad results from those things. So learn experiences with those. Again, God's attitude towards stubborn, and we won't turn there, but God's attitude towards stubborn and disobedient children in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy. We won't, because of time, we'll stay out of that. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 30. I'll probably end with this. And I had the last section I have is on spiritual neglect, and I'll maybe cover that next time. Actually, I will. But Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 17. Now, before I read this, there are a lot of beautiful passages in the Bible that describe things, the way they picture things, or expressions. But this is not one of them. Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 17. The eye that mocks a father and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by the vultures. So it's a very descriptive verse, but it's not a beautiful verse in the way it's describing the things it's describing. So, again, impress upon our kids to not be selfish. Anything, any questions or comments?